Welcome to Coffee with the College, a podcast brought to you by the American College of Healthcare Executives, Wisconsin chapter. We're picking up our talk with Ron by going back to lessons learned from the AlphaGo story he shared last time. In 2016, Lee Sedol, who was considered to be the best Go player in the world, lost a set of matches 4-1 against AlphaGo, an artificial intelligence system developed by the Google-owned company DeepMind. Let's listen in as Abraham gets us started asking about move 37 and move 78 in that famous Go match between the AI computer and Lee Sedol.
So I know that there's going to be people who are listening. We've had these same kind of conversations when EMRs were first being touted and saying, this is going to solve all of our problems. There were the privacy concerns that came up. We had providers who were concerned. So I'm sure that there's people who are listening now and they're saying, oh, this is fantastic. But then there's the other people who are thinking, holy cow, I'm going to be out of a job in 5 to 10 years. To kind of set up, maybe I think where one of the things that I was hoping to get out of this was, let's go back to AlphaGo. Mm-hmm. And can you talk about move 37 and the subsequent move 78 by Lee Sedol?
Oh, well, yeah, but that's what I left out of that. Move 37 was in the second game. The computer made a move that Lee Sedol had never seen before. So a computer invented a wholly original a Go move in a certain set of circumstances, which no one had ever seen before, and handily won the game. Lee Sedol, in fact, got up and left the table and went out and smoked a pack of cigarettes because it basically upset him so much. He'd never seen that kind of move. But then the next day, in the next match, he came out on his, I believe it was his 37th move, and Lee Sedol presented a move to the computer that the computer had never seen before. The point being, Lee Sedol never would have had the inspiration to invent move 37 if he hadn't been inspired to do it or driven to do it by the fact that the computer the day before presented him with something wholly original. So what it did was it augmented Lee Sedol's thinking. It expanded his thinking in a way. Remember how nobody could run a 4-minute mile and then one person did and all of a sudden everybody could? Well, not everybody. I can't. I can't even drive a 4-minute mile. But that was, it's that sort of thing. It gives people the ability to make breakthroughs. It takes them out of a certain line of thinking where they do a little bit of lateral thinking. Lee Sedol had been playing human opponents his entire life. And then in a lateral twist of fate, he played a computer that showed him a move he'd never seen before, which caused his brain to make new synaptic associations and invent a move that he had never thought of before. So if you transfer that to healthcare, that's where I think it can be a little bit awesome. It has the potential to give us the inspiration for ideas that we've never had before. And like I said, in a lot of fields, people oversell AI. Like when people say that AI is going to be able to write books, there's a certain art to books, and I don't think that it's going to come to that. And writing books is completely different than taking different types of data and trying to make inferences from them, from billions and billions of healthcare records. That's where AI excels in, is in jumping into these data pools and bringing something out that makes sense. But it also, in almost all cases, takes a human sort of looking for something and being able to use the AI as a tool. And really, AI is kind of, I don't even like to call it that. It's machine learning. And the reason it's able, because artificial intelligence implies that it's thinking on their own. Well, what it's not doing that as of yet, but what it's doing is it's able to process massive amounts of data quicker than it ever has before and look for tiny things you never would have thought of before. Sort of like in Moneyball, when you know they were able to figure out that home runs weren't as important as just getting someone on base. It was an insight that nobody had had before. And it was because, but a human noticed it. A human noticed that sort of glitch in the data and then took advantage of it and completely changed the game of baseball. So that's what may happen to healthcare, but healthcare is so large and there's so much data, I can't do the math in my head. But take 250,000 pieces of data times 300 million people, and we're talking about, you know, a whole lot of data. Then you mix in the genomics with that. Then you mix in cell phone data, telemetry data, and, you know, other data. I think we're going to see some things that we hadn't really, you know, we hadn't really thought of before.
So, Ron, just talking about data, and Abraham, you asked before about garbage in, garbage out, and yesterday I got an invitation to a webinar that was titled Clinical Interface Terminology, the Key to Accurate Healthcare Analytics. And what they were billing it as is not having doctors think in coding speak, but rather just describe what the patient is experiencing and let the AI or something standardize that data into something that can then be aggregated, that can then produce inferences.
I would rather have the doctor talk like a doctor. And there actually is a set of information when we're transferring information from one to the other. I believe it's called the USCDI is the format that all this data is supposed to be in. So there is a certain way which electronic healthcare records are going to be structured by law that you know, there are certain fields that need to be included. There's certain information that needs to be included that's not abstract. When you're talking about something linguistic, then that can lead into abstraction. I was married to a doctor for 20 years, and I heard exactly the way she gave her notes at the end of the day. She gave them in a manner which was which works with the transcriptionist putting it into the appropriate fields, essentially the scribe putting it into the appropriate fields in the electronic healthcare record. I think we ought to do that that way for now, because you can, because of the semantic differences in the way, if they're just going to listen to what a doctor's saying, well, let's say he says the word book. Well, that could mean a couple of things. It might be a book, or it might be like to book a reservation, you know? And so the wrong semantic meaning might be attached to a word. It was out there, James Patterson. So I just don't think we're there linguistically. Let's get Noam Chomsky on this. I don't think we're there linguistically to handle that. I would rather have the doctor just go ahead, either have a scribe in the room or have a doctor type in the information or dictate their notes in the manner they always do, because that leaves less room for error and less room for garbage in.
Let's pause for a moment to thank our sponsors who make this podcast possible, and for that, we truly appreciate them. Our premier sponsors are Epstein Ewan Architects, HGA, and Hush Blackwell. Our preferred sponsors are Hall Render, Findorf, Nutanix, and Quarles & Brady.
Do you have any fear or thought that young future providers will use these AI inferences as a crutch, and it might become like a spell check in Word, and so 78 move 78 can't happen because they never learned to critical think, because they used AI throughout the whole training of their career?
I think we've already kind of passed that
Okay.
Past right. that point too, I think it already is a crutch, like you said, with spell check or grammar checks. Because we went from spell checks to grammar checks to now we've got a check that will see whether or not you're writing a lot like Ernest Hemingway, or tell you who you're writing like. It's not so much a crutch as it is like it's like going from a three wood. I'm in Augusta, Georgia. It's like going from a three wood to a driver, but a really good new type driver. It's not a crutch. It's just part of the, and it may make you able to swing the club a little bit sloppier, but your intended result is better. I think, and this also goes back to what I said about the shortage of doctors that is looming. And I believe also at least a shortage of nurse practitioners, and that this can be used to help take up a little bit of the slack there. And I hate to say, increase the workload of health providers. It may, in terms of patients being seen, but we do face a looming shortage of healthcare professionals, and this may be one of the things that helps take up the slack.
Yeah. The quote that comes to my mind is the famous Deming quote, that every system is perfectly designed to achieve exactly the results that it gets. I think that's kind of what we're talking about, right? We're talking about, we have a system that works for whatever the outcomes we're getting today. But what you're talking about is changing the system with technology or whatever. We're adding a new variable that we heretofore haven't considered. And it was going to give us considerations and results that we can't consider. But until we get to that point, until we allow that in, or until it happens, whether we let it or not, we're not going to be able to move on to that Lee Sedol type next move where we're changing people's lives and we're changing people's health, right?
It's possible. I would actually move from one analogy to the other. Have y'all read the three body problem, the book? Mm-mm. There's a three body problem. What that is in Newtonian physics. If you have, let's say the moon and the earth, their orbits are, because there's two of them. And if you have just two bodies in orbit, each of them has a certain gravitational mass, right? So let's say, so that you can predict at any point in time where the earth is going to be relative to the moon. All right. Well, in physics, the second you add a third body to that, let's say the sun, things become highly unpredictable and highly unstable, right? Two is fine. With two, two is predictive, and two is the way things have been. So let's make an analogy to healthcare. We've had the doctor and we've had, the patient, all right? And we can sort of predict where one is in relation to the other, but then we're throwing in this third body of, and that's, to me, is the better analogy. We're throwing in this third body, which is going to make the orbits of healthcare providers, the patients, be entirely unpredictable relative to each other. It's like, it's not going to be chaos. It's just, I believe what we're going to see is a high degree of unpredictability, which in a way touches on, black swan theory, where something mm-hmm. comes out of Nassim Taleb's book, where something comes out of nowhere and changes everything. Today, I was looking at, there's a Cirrus, C-I-R-R-U-S jet, which, let's say you're flying with your family members and you have, and you're the pilot, and let's say you have a heart attack or incapacitated and can't fly anymore. The people in your plane, your family or whoever's in the plane, there's a big red button in the top of the plane, and you can hit that, and it will, it already knows where you are through GPS, but it will find the closest emergency airport, and then it will take you in and land the plane for you. So it'll notify authorities and find the closest airport and then land you. It'll land your plane. And that's a bunch of different AIs working together for a marvelous result. And that's what I'm saying And, you know, if you'd told people that 10 years ago, they would have thought you'd have been crazy. But that's like an add-on you can buy on a plane now. It's like, give me the big red button that'll land the plane for me. You know, it's you never would have thought that artificial intelligence would have gotten that far. But it is. And we're at a point now. I don't think we'll ever get the point where the AI sort of gets malicious like it did in 2001, a Space Odyssey. But it's going to certainly make the rules of medicine, the legal rules of medicine, you know, it's medical privacy. It's going to make all these things very, very tenuous. And where I think we're going to see one of its best uses is in senior care and allowing seniors to live more independently. Yeah, you give up your privacy because your daughter in California can see what your heart rate is at that minute. But your daughter in California can also see if you fall down. You know, you won't have elderly people falling down and being on the floor for 7 hours. If when we get to a point, which I know we are, where seniors are monitored a whole lot, you give up certain things for the benefits that I'm able to live longer in my own house because I have all these AI tools sort of looking out after me.
If you can highlight maybe what would you say our three key takeaways should be from our conversation today?
The first takeaway would be that I think AI on balance in healthcare is going to fulfill its promise as it might not do in other industries. We shouldn't be scared of it. We should be a little bit scared of the fact that big data companies are going to be using that data and cross-pollinating it with other data that they already have on us. And probably the third big trend is the fact that, and I didn't talk about this really, but that it's going to lead more and more into the flattening out of the distribution curve of where healthcare is going to be delivered. Because so much of healthcare is going to take place in the home through devices like these, and your doctor will be able to access this information, that there may not be a need for giant, large institutions in the center of some town. And that's already sort of happening. You see it like in Nashville, they moved Vanderbilt Hospital, bought a mall 7 miles out of town, a mall that went bankrupt. And I think they have something like 90 clinics inside that mall now. But I think the fact that this information is not siloed anymore, is not going to be siloed anymore, allows for healthcare delivery to take place in places where we're not used to seeing it before. The curve of where things are going to be delivered, the bell curve, with generally the hospital or the doctor's office being at the top of the curve, is going to flatten out. I mean, for instance, you can get healthcare at Walmart now. There's going to be a huge inventory of movie theaters that are never going to start up again. Those are perfect. They're around people. They have parking. So I think that's going to be one unintended effect of all this, is healthcare is going to be delivered in places where it just wasn't possible to be delivered before.
How in predictive analytics could all of the AI we're talking about today help us in a future pandemic?
I think probably the way it could help in a future pandemic is just by being able to integrate such different factors like what people were on what planes, what temperatures are in certain areas, and does that affect, well, we know it does that affect, you know, the growth of the disease. Basically, the way it will help is being able to take all different kinds of data that we didn't think of putting together before, and we're able to put it together. You know, I mean, you can do, there are the obvious things, like you're able to do heat maps of where the diseases are and that sort of thing. But like I said, being able to mix in where people have traveled and the specific context of the areas they're going to and coming from. You know, so in other words, you're taking airline records You're taking health records, you're taking weather records, you know, you're taking all kinds of different data and able to make them work together. I think that's where it is. It's sort of in the shepherding of all the data into one pen so that it can be looked at.
Thanks, Ron, for recapping those key takeaways. We've really appreciated the wide-ranging info you've shared with us over these past two podcasts. I don't know about our listeners, but I do know Brian Abraham and I felt like you opened up a lot of new windows of possibilities to those of us in healthcare with your insights. Thanks, too, to all of you for listening in. We hope you'll join us next time when we'll be switching it up yet again to talk about public policy issues facing healthcare in 2021. We hope to see you, or at least that you'll be listening to us then. In the meantime, take care.